Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2019 Home Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
So this is Read Like a Pirate. Pirates. The title came from my desire to make annotating in your book sound exciting. But it's read like professional investigative researching and treasure excavating seekers. And the original title came when I was a Cub Scout day camp director for a stake in Colorado, and they had a pirate theme, and some parents got really upset because that wasn't very scout-like, right? I mean, where in the scout law is pirating. And so I whipped out this particular thing, and by the end of the week, all of my Cub Scouts, 350 of them, were able to churn out what pirates meant, except for instead of seekers, it was seafarers. And so it was fun to be able to reuse that. So that's what we're going to do today. So I live in Youngsville, North Carolina, just north of the Raleigh area. And like I said, I'm a writer in my books. Somebody mentioned mindset as we visited a little bit beforehand. And so I'm going to introduce you to piratitude. All right, we're going to have a mindset change. So if any of you are like, I don't write in my books, which I'm very excited that you're here. It was very brave of you to come in. And some of you mentioned a family that had a mother's annotations in the set of scriptures. And how much do you think she paid for those scriptures? Like, especially those nice little leather, it's got the gold on the side and it's embossed and their names on it. How much do we pay for a new set of scripture? Our kid turns 8, they go on a mission, and we want to give them a new set of scriptures. Blank set. Huh? 70, 80 bucks. And is it cool to write in our scriptures? Yeah, annotate all over those suckers. Why? Why is it fine to write in a $90 leather book? Like, if you got an Eastman Press book, you know, off the shelf, and you'd spent, have you ever seen those really nice ones that look, people buy them for decorations, right? They don't even crack the suckers open. I pulled one off a shelf, and I'm like, nobody's even properly opened up this book before, you know, one each side, and gently, you know, exercise the spine a little bit before, because it's there for decorations. But we will feel no qualms about writing in this. But you put somebody a $10 Barnes & Noble paperback book in there, we may not write in that. Pride and Prejudice, nuh-uh, we don't write in that. So I'm going to ask you to go ahead and adopt some piratitude. Find a thrift store book that you spent a quarter on, and go ahead and take out your cutlass and mark it up. All right, so we're going to take up our cutlass and our pirate, and we're going to go to town. And it could be a pencil, it can be a highlighter, and everybody has different feelings, but we're going to go ahead and take charge. So we're going to talk about marginalia, all that little stuff that goes in the margins. There's like a technical, cool little book term for that. It's called marginalia, and it's your treasure map. So I hope we can get excited. This is a new concept of not writing in our books, and an old one at the same time. So it depends, you know, books used to be really hard to get, you know, 500, 600, 800 years ago. You were usually in the monastery, they were really well kept and people didn't write into it. But once it got into this little time period, especially in the 1700s and 1800s, we didn't have a whole lot of paper to begin with, so all those papers got utilized a lot more. So for example, some of our founding fathers are prolific marginalianists. And John Adams, if you look at his margins and whatnot, were the basis of a lot of their speeches and their writings back and forth. Thomas Jefferson, all of them were ones that would write in their books. Now, how many would you like to own one of these books from their library, right? Oh yeah, I would. And what would happen if you would open it up and you would see the marginalia in there and you would actually read what they thought to write in the margins? Which would be profound. You were like hoping that you'd get some kind of nugget, or maybe they would be just as confused about something somebody else wrote as you are, especially if you're reading something like Plato or any of these Seneca or these old books. They probably struggled with many of the things that we do. So it's nice to come and have have an experience of coming face to face, not only with the author of a book you're reading. So I can have come face to face with James E. Talmadge, and I can come face to face with any of my, this was given to my husband before he served his mission in New Jersey. And there's a couple of pencil marking in Prince Charming's handwriting in there. And I got a chance to come face to face with 19-year-old David. I mean, that's pretty cool. I didn't even get to know him at that time period. And to be able to do that is a little bit of a legacy, let alone the additions and the inscriptions that come in from his grandmother who gave it to him. So let's go on with our piratitude. Read actively, not passively. Consider at every step whether what you read in accords with your own experience and how far it may be applied to the guidance of your own life. But if you disagree with an author or shocked by his heresies, read on, nevertheless. Tolerations of difference is the mark of a gentleman. Make notes of the passages that offer help towards the reconstruction of your character, not somebody else's character, or the achievement of your own aims, and classify these notes in such a way that they may at any moment and for any purpose be ready at your hand. That's by Will Durant. He's the, and if you're familiar, he's like a 10-volume history book series, The Greatest Minds and Ideas of All Times. And so, you know, we've got so many experts out there that are telling us this is a great thing. So when we take on an attitude of piratitude, when we encounter a book, we get the opportunity to converse with the author and come face to face with what they have to offer. They oftentimes have motives and objectives in their own book, but it's not just about what they want us to think, but about what our experience interacting with them comes to think. So we get that opportunity. Thomas L. Jeffers, this was an article I found really recently in the Weekly Standard. It's just an article online. He says, by discovering what authors think, feel, and care for, we find out who they are. But that's only half of it. By entering into a dialogue with their books, annotating in the margins, when we agree or disagree, or when we aren't sure, we define who we are. Gives us a chance to take a stand if we need to. So we're going to talk about taking up our pen or our cutlass. This would be in place of that as a pirate. You may have heard this quote before, especially the pen is mightier than the sword. True this, beneath the rule of men entirely great, the pen is mightier than the sword. Behold the arch enchanter's wand, itself a nothing. But take sorcery from the master's hand to paralyze the Caesar and to strike down the loud earth breathless. Take away the sores, states can be saved without it. So much has happened because of a pen, and so much can transport when we are brave and bold, whether we're writing a letter, whether we are writing a constitution or a declaration of independence, or whether we're writing our thoughts and our encouragement to a missionary who's going through a hard time. Our pen is so very mighty, and it's just as mighty in the margins. You also get to converse with yourself. So when you come face to face with great ideas, the greatest thinkers of all times, you get an opportunity to think about what you're reading, about what you're encountering. And this particular one, this is from The Obstacle is the Way. It says, an important caveat is that we are not born with such a structure. It must be built and actively reinforced. During the good times, we strengthen ourselves and our bodies so that during the difficult times, we can depend on it. We protect our inner fortress so it may protect us. Have you ever encountered a thought like that before? I don't know if you can read it up there, but I can read it one more time. An important caveat, this is what's underlined at the top, is that we are not born with such a structure. It must be built and actively reinforced. During the good times, we strengthen ourselves and our bodies so that during the difficult times, we can depend on it. We protect our inner fortress so it may protect us. Does that make you think of anything? So she just gave us a whole lovely answer, and I should have brought the microphone so that would have been recorded. But it made you think of whose talk again?
Elder Eyring.
And so what would you write in the margins about that particular stuff?
I would probably write down the conference talk it came from.
Yeah, you might want to, and maybe a little bit of a quote. If you ran out of room, I can show you a little tactic. Have you ever done a glue-in into your scriptures where you glue along the edge of the paper? I should have brought a little tutorial for you. one of these had it because I specifically grabbed them that did, because I didn't have enough room to write in the margins to do that with. You can do it with a Post-it notes. The thing about Post-it notes is they'll discolor your paper over time. But you know what? I'm writing all in this thing, and I don't really care. I mean, it's not like, unless you're doing it. So here's one. This is in John Taylor Gatto's Dumbing Us Down, The Hidden Curriculum of Compulsory Schooling. I must have had a lot to say, whatever that particular reading. And so you just crank up a glue stick to where it's got a good chunk at the thing, and run your the glue stick edge right along the edge, so you're getting like a good quarter of an inch to no more than half an inch ability, and then just stick it right in here in the crease of the page, and then close the book up and let it glue, and then you can suddenly, like, you have a whole other page in here that you can do and add on, or you can reference. You know, oftentimes these books have blank pages at the back and reference to go look at the end, or at the end of the chapter sometimes they have gaps. You know, feel free to do that, but that's one particular thing that you can do. So I encountered the same thing, and I didn't think of Elder Eyring's talk and whatnot, but I did think of that phrase of, when you are prepared, you shall not fear. And so that's what I wrote in the margin. I wrote skills and abilities and testimony. So I'm a Lemmy trained mentor, and we use what's called the Lemmy scholarship ladders, and we assess where kids are and ourselves on a scholarship ladder that contains visions, mission, abilities, and skills and knowledge for each different project and age range. And so for me, I made a connection that these are some skills and abilities that were needed to be acquired, and also a buildup of testimony. And also, you know, at this particular reread, I could write in here, I was thinking of the parable of the 10 virgins and how they filled up their reservoir and build that inner fortitude to be able to withstand something. So you make a connection in large different ways, and suddenly you're having a conversation with yourself, with the author, and Elder Eyring. Look at that, that was pretty exciting. And then you might have thought it was really, really cool, and you went, kids, maybe you have a little bit older kids, I just made this really great connection. And do you remember that talk at General Conference? And then you make that connection, and suddenly they're involved. Or suddenly they pick up and they read the same book, because in my family, I've been training my kids in writing that, and we'll talk a little bit more. This was a book I made them all read. We had five different, I gave each one of my kids their own copy to write in it, and their encounters with it might be totally different than mine.
What age group is
for that book? For this book, my youngest child is 12, and my oldest graduates tomorrow, and he's 18, so I have four. So my, you know, I'm in a different age level, but I might do the same thing with children that are reading and Little House in the Big Woods, and see what we can pull out of that. So it, you know, it doesn't really matter when you're reading good quality books. You're going to be able to make connections and whatnot. So Oliver DeMille, in his book, Killer Hero Education, he said, by taking notes as you read, you begin a discussion with yourself about the things you are learning from the book. So oftentimes, I remember growing up, we were so focused on reading a book and getting what the author wanted out of for us. You know, what is it? That was what maybe my teachers would focus on. What did they mean by this? What did that? Which is all really important for us to consider, and I don't mean to take that out of the equation, and that's part of that conversation with the author. But I think we should go a step further and get what we're getting out for ourselves. What does piratitude bring us? These are some of the things we talked about a little bit beforehand. But we're going to increase our abilities. This is why we talked about, hopefully, some motivation that will help you feel like it's okay to do that. But some of the benefits of writing in your books is increased comprehensions. So it keeps you interested and engaged in the book. How many of you have ever read a book that was a little painful to get through? I mean, we're not talking about a candy book here that keeps you thrilled and excited. What you call them, roller coaster books? Yeah. Not all of them are that way. Or you're training yourself to read good and beautiful books, or hard classic literature, or just a non-entertainment book, right? We're not reading, the latest, I'm thinking The Work and the Glory. I remember those coming out, and they were like the great candy books, and we were just churning through them. But we were reading so fast through them that we weren't really picking up any nuggets if they were there. But it allows us to get through a difficult book. So really recently, one of the books I had to read was Hamlet. I taught an advanced Shakespeare class this last semester, and I needed to walk about 12 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds through Hamlet for the first time and help them to understand that. And while I've had a fair amount of Shakespeare experience, it's not something that comes naturally to me, and I'm going to need to take it one step at a time. And so you'll see that as I'm reading through the book, I'm making connections, I'm asking questions. I'm wondering what on earth did that mean. I may have to go and look at the side margins here, if I've made a connection to other things that I've read before. If I'm seeing a great quote, I might go do that. And if I break it up in small things, I didn't sit down and read Hamlet in one day and annotate it. Okay, I sat down and made time for it. Maybe I went scene by scene by scene over a period of like 2 months to be able to get through it. All right, so it helps you remember what you read. I am a visual learner. I don't remember audio things, so being able to be up here listening to a speaker, if I'm not annotating what you're doing at doing that, or even in a kinesthetic way of working on a project with my hands, I'm going to retain a lot less. But if I'm taking notes during an auditory thing, I'm going to get a lot more out of it. But I find that how many of you watch or you listen to some vlog, or you watch a vlog, or you listen to a podcast, or any number of these things, I don't retain almost anything out of it if I'm listening to it that way. If I'm just reading a book, I'm not going to retain a whole lot out of it. So depending on your learning style, you may get a lot more when you're grabbing a hold of your different senses. If you're doing something actively as well as reading it, and maybe reading aloud on top of it, you've hit three sentences right there: an auditory, a verbal, and a kinesthetic, writing down. It also, when you're making connections that connect you to your own experience, to what you're reading, it means more to you, and you're gonna get a lot more from it. So the more that you're thinking and marking and asking questions as you get through the book, the more you are able to be engaged with the author, okay? And not take everything at surface value. Have you ever just read through something, and since you're reading with a pen, you're like, wait a minute, let me underline that. It gives you an opportunity to go back and reread something. Did I get far enough? Did I get all the way? And I never like to underline something in a book without saying why I did it. Like, have you ever highlighted something that's important? Okay, why? Why is that important? And it gives you an opportunity to take it down another step, another level. All right, it allows you to discern. We've had a lot of common theme over some of the presentations I've seen today of discovering truth. It allows you to take an opportunity to look really closely at what it was that you underlined, whether for good or ill, or you agreed or you didn't disagree, agree, that you can discern whether or not that is true. You get a second opportunity to ask yourself, is this really is this really true? Do I jive with this? Does this mean something to me? One of the things that I really like is it helps me organize my thoughts and ideas. It helps me when I take an idea and I want to go back and maybe discussing Hamlet later on. As we go through the play, I'm able to pull up those ideas I had in the moment. Those epiphanies aren't lost. And oftentimes when I want to go and transcribe something into a notebook, I might lose something in that moment, or I'm in a role and I only have a limited amount of time to encounter this book. And so writing right in here saves me a couple of steps. Not that writing it somewhere else isn't helpful. And if that works for you, then that's great. One of the things that we're not going to discuss today is the reading journals, and journaling or commonplace booking is another term. So if you just cannot overcome that hurdle to write in your book, you know, maybe pencil might be your weapon of choice, and not a pen, you might want to consider whether or not writing it in a separate journal that you keep side by side. For me, I find that I always misplace the journal and the book, or you come across a different edition, even if I write a page number and the page numbers don't align with that. So I wish books came with a little journal section in the back. That might be really helpful. We should all plug in to do that. But this gives me an opportunity. But, you know, I bought this used, brand new. It's $10.99 on the back, but I bought it used somewhere, and I'm not going to necessarily feel a loss of that. And I will tell you, though, when my kids had to go, and one of my younger kids was taking a lower level Shakespeare class in our co-op this last year, and he went to the shelf, and there was a couple of versions of Merchant of Venice. Well, I had like three copies of it on the shelf. He opens it up, puts that one back on the shelf, opens it up, put that one back on the shelf. Moms, yeah, I'm going to take that one. Anyway, so my cute little 12-year-old son specifically chose one that was written in because he thought that was going to help him. So he's not only encountering Shakespeare and Mr. Cliff here, and mom in that particular thing, and he found it valuable and as an advantage, and it's really cute to see his little notes in there as well. It really helps me find later things. And I don't know if it's more of a visual thing, but I'd be like, oh, I read that in a book. And you wanted to share somebody and with somebody. And so you go and pull it off the shelf. I have no idea which journal it might be in when I was doing a little bit more heavier commonplacing before I embraced writing in a book. There could be a plethora, but I knew the book that I was reading because I'd held it in my hands. I had made friends with it. We had done the bonding and was able to open up to that visual page. I may not have a photographic memory, but I'd be able to remember kind of what it looked like when I placed it in there because I'd had such an interaction. And I love that when we come into discussing books, and I'm a big proponent in discussing books, if you reading it is only just one aspect to encounter a book, but the opportunity to discuss it or to debrief it with mom, even if she hasn't read it, and that's a whole other class of having a book conversation with your kids about a book you hadn't read, that's exciting too. But being able to regurgitate that back and to show them things that were meaningful passage, and as you're having a book discussion and those that have participated are glancing through the book, they suddenly have this moment of, oh, I remember when I read that in the book and I underlined it or highlighted it, and it allows you to find things to use later on. So I was getting ready to do, I took a writing class recently to be able to mentor other kids in their writing, and I wanted to quote something from The Hiding Place. And I'm like, I know this quote is in there. And it was so nice to be able to go to the shelf. Unfortunately, I had like 3 copies of it and figure out which one it was that I'd underlined it, and to be able to find it really quick and include it in my writing. So I find that my students that that have embraced writing in the book and they want to go back and quote something into their writing, that is much easier for them to go and do that. But using a writing journal works really well for that as well. So I don't mean to underscore that. It allows you to quickly review and discuss later on, and I already kind of touched on that, but how many of you like read Little Men right before we had the book discussion in like month beforehand? Oh, 2 of you, okay. And the rest of you, you've read Little Men at some point maybe, right? And some of you, it's okay, you didn't read it. But imagine if you were able to come, I don't have mine in here. I hadn't read it like a year. I didn't have time. I was reading some other, you know, your book stack, for those of you who enjoy reading a lot, it was really big, but it was great to be able to pull Little Men off the shelf and not even fear because I had things written in there that I could participate and bring to the conversation. Because once I opened it up and I glanced at my little notes, it was like a little flag, a little light bulb that went and made me reconnect back to that person that I was when I read it last. So let's talk about treasure excavation. So we're not just reading books to necessarily become, you know, better at the content of the books, but we want to be able to find truth. And I love that we've had that kind of overall reaching theme that I've seen in multiple classes, and they talked about it in The Good and Beautiful Things. We want them to be able to find truth. So the real treasures are your epiphanies, the things that come to you. You're worried about what you're writing in the margins, it doesn't really matter, because they're meaningful to you. We have this need to want to write something like powerful and insightful and to be legendary and worthy of inheritance or something like that. But that's okay. So if you come up with some sort of, oh, this makes me think of something that is not even entirely related, that's okay. Write it down, write it in the margins, write it in your journal. If you have made a connection to something else, If what you've read, for example, when we talked about earlier, reminds you of this talk you heard there at General Conference, then you've made a connection, and that's worthy of doing. And the next person who reads that book behind you, and they understand, you know, Ensign, August 2014, page blah, 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 they could go to that same thing, and they are going to come face to face of what you came from. And they're not going to get that if you didn't write that in there. And that's okay. Do you have to fill the margins with tons? There are books that I read and there might only be 3 or 4 things that I underline and write in there. And that's okay. Richard G. Scott in the Ensign 1993 said, "It is worth great effort to organize the truth we gather into simple statements of principles." So when we're looking for truth, we're often looking for principles. And principles are the guiding ideas or philosophy or truths that are behind the actions that we take. This one of my favorite quotes by Richard G. Scott is like a powerhouse for principles. He says, "Principles are concentrated truth packaged for application to a wide variety of circumstances." And I loved that. But I struggled for many years on how do I know if this is a principle? Have any of you, I mean, some of you may just pick them out like cherries and make a pie. But I, maybe it's because I'm a convert to the church and I wasn't raised in that particular kind of mindset. I wasn't nurtured that way. I really struggled with it for a great many years. So one of my friends, Audrey Rindlisbacher, has been coming out. She is the owner of the Mission Driven Mom Academy, or the Mission Driven Mom Mastermind Facebook page. And she put it in a list for me, and it was transformational for me. So she gave out some characteristics of true principles. And I'll just go ahead and read them for you. So they're on the recording. The foundational idea upon which behavior is based, not the application. So what do you think that might mean? Foundational idea on which the behavior is based and not the application. So we want to be honest with other people, right? So the action we might be would be, you know, I found somebody's wallet on the floor and I wanted to turn it in and do the right thing, but what's the principle behind it? Honesty and integrity. It can be a simple thing like that. The next one is true for all people all the time. Now that can be like, and she divides them up, and I'm not gonna go into all of her content for you, but I highly recommend you go and find her and get to know what she has to say. That there are first principles that apply to all people at all times, and then you have principles that maybe apply to an organization. While we might feel that all the principles we learn here in the church are true first principles, and they are, but they don't necessarily apply to somebody at the Baptist church. And they may have some things that apply specifically for them. It creates greater freedom for individual and society. It enlightens the understanding, enlarges the soul, expands your mind, brings new connections and ideas. Oftentimes when you feel compelled to underline something, you probably have encountered something that has to do with a principle, whether they're applying it, and it's up to you to interpret, okay, what's the principle behind this? Why is this speaking to me? Why is it that I feel maybe the spirit in that particular moment, that this is a good and righteous thing? It empowers and gives hopes. We're not going to necessarily encounter a principle that leave us feeling in dark feeling and places and confusion and whatnot. However, we might choose to underline something that makes us feel that way and say, not true, in the margin. There's one particular book, I think it was this, The Obstacle is the Way. And I blacked out this whole section. I was like, this is stupid. Why is this here? You could see it. I just X'd out this whole particular section in here and had a disagreement in the margin. You could see it all down here. I'm like, gross, ew. He was talking about something. I don't see how this helps, is helpful at all. I think believing that all of children of God are the same as us creates the same results. And it was something that he put out there, and I just didn't, like, it was totally wrong. It was the only thing that I felt like violently, no, and I put a big X and my reasons why in the margins, and to have that, you know, that conversation with the author. Generates growth, enlivens, increases health and wholeness, creates win-win situations. That last one I think is really important to remember, that is it a benefit for all involved? All right, so we're going to go into, before we hit in this last thing, an actual little workshop, because I feel like we're going to go into some of the tools. So many ideas that we can get out here, like practical application. So hopefully at this point you kind of understand the whys, and you understand what some of the results can be. And these are just a fraction of what I could share with you, but I wanted to leave time for you to interact with something. Is that we can talk about things all day. We can talk about symbols you can use in your books. We can talk about what you might underline and why. We can talk about a myriad of things, like you could summarize each page at the top of the page. You can have an interaction with this book on so many different levels. And when you research this particular topic online, you're going to find a great deal of opinions. It's sort of like homeschooling, where you're going to find all these different flavors. But I want you to do it your way. It is your book. It is your experience. And if you try to do too many things at one time, you are going to kind of overwhelm yourself. Just like if you tried to Waldorf / Charlotte Mason and do a math curriculum and all of these different things at a new time, it's better for us to take on a new skill or a new habit within pieces at a time. So the first of my top three things on here is be bold and command the ship. And that would mean, how are you guys familiar with the 7 habits of highly effective people? The first one is begin with the end in mind. This book is meant for you. This is your book. This is your experience with the book. And you, if you're taking a class, your teacher may want you to have a different experience, and you should have that one too. But at the same time, we want you to begin a book with what your purpose in mind. So how many of you have ever gone to the scriptures, maybe or attended general conference or church with a question in your mind? Any of you have ever done that? I should hope many of us go. You know, we prepare for general conference. We can do the same thing with great books. We can go to them with questions in mind, even if it has nothing to do with dumbing down of America, we might be able to go into it. So I'm going to open up a few of these. And I said, and I'm going to put in there, this has another glue in. I folded a page in half and glued it in. And I gave myself some prompts. You can get prompts that you have for yourself, or you might ask a friend or a mentor or somebody who's been there and read this book before you, what do you think I should look for as I read this book? And that will just take it to a whole other level. This particular book, the first time, or second or third time I read it, I was taking a course in how to mentor in the classics. And the mentor gave these three for this particular book. It says, if these are the 7 lessons taught in public schools, what are the solutions to these lessons and what are the ways to heal them? So one of the things that I learned, kind of paying off on the pirate theme, is there's this book called, I didn't grab it, it's called Teach Like a Pirate. And it's for public school teachers, but there's a lot of gems in there. And one of the things that really stood out to me when I read it, and I'm like underlining that, this is great. I probably transcribed it in a commonplace book, this particular section. And he talked about our brains and how they're designed to look for questions. They're designed to ask questions and to seek out answers. We are natural question seekers and truth seekers and whatnot. And so if you ask your brain a question and then proceed, the answers somehow need to follow. And I think this must be obviously a divine principle, because it happens every time at General Conference. I go into it with a question in mind, and every time without fail, I have received the answer. And if I didn't receive it in General Conference itself, it was probably while I was rereading the General Conference edition of the magazine with a pen in the hand. And it came then, and the answer was there all along. And so that was one question. Another one is, to what extent of the 7 lessons am I perpetuating in my own homeschool? And so things that I can keep in mind as I read with, and what do I disagree with in this particular book? So that's that. And then I wrote on my own particular one, how do I inspire difficult subjects? How do I get kids to want to do math or whatever it is that I want them to do? And I was hoping to glean some answers in that. So I might be actively looking for something in a book. So in The Obstacle is the Way, at the front, I wrote, argue against the elements of stoicism. This book was filled with, I landed in 3 different books that all had to do with the philosophy of stoicism. And I ended up getting, I was trying to wrap my brain around it, of why is it that I'm connecting to this and not connecting to this at the same time? And I wrote at the top of here, read the Bible dictionary on stoicism. Did you know that was in there? And the Stoics were some of the first Greek converts to the church in the New Testament. And I thought that was really fascinating. Argue against the elements of stoicism that remove God from his proper role and the Savior in involvement in our lives. They have a lot of good intentions and whatnot at it, but the why was just missing for me. And I wrote that in there because I knew this was based upon, you know, reading in the covers and whatnot, that I was going to be encountering some stoicism that came in with some different ones. This book, A Pig in Provence, So, you know, just a wide variety of places. There's just huge different amounts. The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. Hopefully you're all familiar if you haven't done that. You know, I wrote in here, what can I learn about being a better home organizer? I was going through like, this is chaos moment when I happened to read this. I wanted to learn how to become more inspired to just better manage my home. And I found so many gems in this particular book. And this book is about a family's encounter with the Holocaust and with Nazi Germany and being sent to a concentration camp. And I found boatloads of gems in here. And so if you ever want a good book to start with and start practicing principles and start practicing that's worthy of underlining, you can see book darts are a little book lover's friend. They're little metal tabs that you can put in that point to specific passages. And you can see the amount of, if you want, I can pass them around, the amount of book darts that I put in there and whatnot. It's really super helpful, all of these things to come in with when you're encountering even non-scripture, but something that is really super powerful and that can transform your life. Look at how far I am in Jesus the Christ. I'm so proud of myself because this was really, really hard for me. And if it wasn't for writing in with pens and underlining things, I would be struggling with this. It's not something I ever read. I didn't serve a mission and have those dedicated times, but I've been reading it with my 18-year-old every morning as we are hopefully going to be putting in mission papers and by the end of the year or whatever his timeline is. And we've been having the greatest of discussions side by side as we've been doing a little bit of a semi-mom-son companionship study. But I've gotten that far. Super excited. When I was reading Nurtured by Love by Shinichi Suzuki, if you're familiar with the Suzuki method of musical instruction, this is a really great book. I wrote down, list all the songs, composers, and performers he mentions and go seek them out because I wanted to come excited for him. So you can ask a book a question and it will give you answers, or if nothing else, your brain is still thinking about this and it might just come to your mind with the mildest of particular things and whatnot. I don't know if you just want to look at books that are written in. Might be helpful. So, command the ship. Ask it a question. Decide what it is that you want from it. Now, if you're doing it for a class, we're doing a class. I'm going to teach Hamlet. And I have to get a bunch of 13, 14-year-olds through Hamlet. And I did some research, like, what am I going to get them from Hamlet? That I'm not necessarily one of those people that are going to come up with great principles on my own, but I know quite a few people, and on Goodreads, and all of these people that will post their epiphanies and ahas, and I can build upon what they have to say. So after some research, I came through with at least some themes or another way that you can command the ships. If I'm going to look for something that I want my kids to be a little bit better at, is another particular way. So some themes that I wrote with Hamlet, there's a couple of pages here. I wanted to focus on virtue with the students I have. So I asked this one, what does this book have to teach me about virtue? And the difference between our words and our actions. And we found plethora amounts of that particular thing. So another way to command the ship is decide some things that you stand for. So some of you may have like family mission statements, vision statements. Oftentimes they contain characteristics or qualities that we want our children to exemplify. That's a really great thing to use. Is there anything that reinforces our family's mission statement? Many of us have women, daughters and young women's. Is there any of the young women values to be found? Is faith, divine nature, individual worth, knowledge, choice, accountability, and you could be writing those in the margins. So if you have a daughter who happens to be going through those things, and maybe she's working on her faith ribbon, or sorry with this section, they leave me in scouting all the time. So I'm not very strong on the young women's program. They can do that. There's been times when my daughter's working on a particular project before she's finished or she's rereading it, and we have her focus while she's working on that particular project of finding those particular things within the books that she's reading. The same thing is true for our young men. If you can find things within the Duty to God book, and I would say the Scout Law and Oath, it's still there, but there's still, a scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. You want them to have all those things whether they stay in scouting or not. And those are things that we, I've oftentimes, when I'm having a discussion with them on a book that I hadn't read with them, I'll ask them, did you find any of the young women's values being lived and exemplified within that book? Did you find any of the Scout Law and Oath being lived and exemplified within that book? If you're teaching a class that happens to have a particular focus, so for example, Lisa, like 2 hours ago, she gave a presentation on science and philosophy. I'm not sure if I'm hacking it right, but she talked about the characteristics of a scientist in the class. And the first one is notice patterns. And I had a son taking her class, and the year before my daughter had taken her class. And we will notice those within a book. Does a person, they don't have to be a scientist to exhibit these characteristics. Did that person make a habit of noticing patterns? Do they challenge assumptions? Do they have the heart of a scientist? Do they read original source documents if I'm noticing them? I'm a big particular fan of things like that. So there's the characteristics of a statesman. There's all these different things here, characteristics and nurtures, that nurtures a young man or a young woman's soul out there that we want to exemplify, even if it's just something as kindness. So if you're going to give your child a book to read and you happen to know that they're struggling with dishonesty, now, don't put, is there any acts of dishonesty in the book? We want to keep it in the positive. But have them notice all of the ways that a person struggles with, encounters, or performs acts of honesty in a book. When do they fail? When do they succeed? And have them tell you about that. Or you can use that to ask them as you're discussing a book afterwards. Any other ideas on how you guys might command the ship as you start a book? Yes, if there is something that your kid is struggling with, I keep a track of a list or qualities that I read a book. I don't know if I did it in any of these ones, but of course they're passing around the room. I will oftentimes write themes that I notice in a book. It could be friendship. Maybe your child is struggling to make friends, keep friends, or they're struggling with a particular friendship, then giving them books that exemplify good, strong friendships is what they need right now. And you can ask them, either use your spiritual eyes to ask them, you know, ahead of time, I want you to see what kind of friendships are in this book. Or maybe you just want them to absorb something and see if they got it afterwards, which is okay if they don't. It's their experience that'll allow you to do that. When you're seeking out and you're reading books, oftentimes I'm one of the questions at the front of the book is, what themes do I pull out? What things stand out to me that I might be able to use to my advantage later on with somebody else? Or half the time, you know, I've had a friend struggle with something and I'm like, dude, have you ever had friends who are like, you go to them, I'm really struggling with this, and they're like, you need to read this book and this book and this book. We all have those friends. You could be that friend if you start keeping that that quote, if you start doing that. And I write that in the front of my books. So that's a lot of begin with the end in mind. These are your books. They are meant for you, and they are meant to grow you as a person. So feel free to make it work for you.
Silly question, but do you know of a list of things, of attributes, where you could say, books on friendship?
Okay.
And then it, like, has a list of things where there's good friendship shown, or honesty, or whoever would say things like that. Do you know of?
Well, there's places that I have that friend, which is helpful. I'm like, I have this friend. We should make friends. You know, I'm really a big fan of some different websites. Audrey Rindlisbacher herself has a lot of good things, themes like that through hers. And I'm trying to think of the Read It Aloud Revival, if Sarah McKenzie does that.
Is it a book?
The Good and the Beautiful oftentimes will do that. Oh, the Read It Aloud Revival, I'm sorry, is a website and a podcast, and it's all about family read-alouds, and they go through and we'll do book reviews, much like The Good and the Beautiful. She probably does the same thing, too. I'm trying to think of who else that I am big fans of. My kids are older now, and I wasn't so Such, man, if I knew this when my poor 18-year-old was going to graduate tomorrow was like six, it would have been so much better. And so I definitely wasn't something that I kept track of when they were younger. But I'm a little bit more into that now with more high school age. So those are something that I keep personally, yeah.
Do you happen to have like a color scheme that you like to try to keep throughout all your books?
Okay, color scheme. Okay, well, there's a couple of, I am not a highlighter fan. That being said, if a highlighter is your friend, that's your weapon of choice, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. But to me, I find them violent on a page, and that's just me as a person, and do that. So I like to use the same pen throughout a book. So that way the next time I read the book, I'll use a different color and you'll see maybe my thoughts change. I may not always agree with what I wrote before. I might underline something that never stood out to me the first time I read it. So I'm a big proponent on any book that is worth marking up more than three or four times is probably worth reading, unless I absolutely hated the book, in which case it's like one of two or three books I chucked across the room. Yeah, there's a couple of those. Actually, one of them still lives on my bookshelf because Tess of the Duovervilles was well written. I just was not happy about the not happy ever after at the end. And spoiler alert, sorry. But and to do that color code, so that's all that I do. But if you want to do a color code, maybe you want to do virtue. Of course, you know, faith is white in the young woman, you know, color. Maybe you have a specific thing to do that. I don't personally do it, but I think that's a great idea. I will write certain different phrases. There's about, I have a handout that I do of different things that I look for that all have to do with, like 80% of them are Lemmy projects. They have like lists of things that we're pulling out of books. Their Quest 1 and 2 project goes through the characteristics of a statesman. So public virtue and private virtue would be one of them. And we'd be talking about courage, or we might go through any particular thing and be exemplifying a statesman who happened to go through that. Tiffany? I do. I would, maybe next year I'll do commonplace books. What's the purpose of a commonplace book? For those of you that cannot make friends with writing in your book, that's okay. There's a solution for you. To me, I'm just too lazy to go to another book. I'm going to do it right in there. Huh? Both is totally a valid option. This is your ship. You do it your way. So both would be... Yeah. A commonplace book is a very fancy name for a book journal. And some of, there's wide varieties. I didn't bring this particular book on commonplacing. Wide varieties of different options that you can do with it. Some people have just a general commonplace or a book diary that they will write down quotes. My particular one, oh, you have your commonplace book. Yeah. That they will write down quotes. When I commonplace, it's usually because I'm working on my penmanship. I really didn't have the best of handwriting, as you can see in my margins. It was something that I took place. So I would take beautiful quotes that meant something to me, and I'd work on my penmanship, and I have volumes of those particular things. I have a nature journal. That is my nature one, that I will read books about nature, and I might transcribe things that I want to remember, epiphanies that I might have. I have one particularly for conferences that I will write in. So Charlotte Mason is a big... proponent of commonplace books, and I can't remember the name of the commonplace book that somebody came out with that kind of analyzed all her different writings and whatnot and compiled it in one place. And so it really is a very individual thing, and commonplace booking was just as prolific among our founding fathers as that was. So it's a book journal, and it really is yours to do what you want. There's a lot of philosophy out there that you can only do that. I don't really start my kids on commonplace booking until they're about 14, that they really already love to write, and they really already do that. And when I do, and they turn 14, usually in their second semester of their freshman year kind of time period, it's in the middle of a Lemmy Pyramid project, and I will go out and buy them a leather one. Like, this is a big deal, and we go through that, and that requires a little bit of training in another class. So we talked about begin with the end in mind. Use your trusty cutlass without fear. Do not worry about what you write in the margins, is my advice to you. If it is a symbol, I write exclamation points. If it's something I'm like, yes, that's awesome, I like that. I am a big lover of beautiful phrasing and wonderful, rich language. And if I just like the way they said that, great. I might understand that and say, beautifully written in the side. I think that's beautiful. So as my kids go through and maybe will encounter my books after a while, I feel like these are items that, you know, hopefully they will love A Pig in Progress province as much as I have. I've read it 4 or 5 times. They will see that I, after a while, they will, because I train them to notice some of the characteristics of scientists, to notice patterns that mom really liked these particular things, but it's something that I enjoy. If it's something I didn't agree with, I will say why in the margin. If it's something I agreed with, I will be like, yes, this is so true. If it makes me think of something else, I will write that. If I want to remember this particular thing about this particular child, I might write their initial in it. I feel a little self-conscious if I lend somebody my book and it's like, Cassie needs this in there, and my poor daughter, like, Jeremy, dude, totally needs that. So I might have a symbol for my kid in there, or I might not lend out that book. I am one of those friends who will let you write my book if you borrow it, because I totally want to see what you had to say in the margins. And I get really excited. So I have a couple of friends that I will trust with my books, and they will write back, and they know that that's okay. Is captures the mysteries of the deep. Circle words and references that you don't know, that you've never encountered before. How many times, especially like I'm reading Hamlet, and it will reference something to Greek mythology, and I'm like, I don't remember that. And we get to come face to face with Shakespeare's education when we do that, and we go and look up some particular Greek reference or something that you didn't know before, and it adds volumes to what you're reading. A simple word can add volumes. So if you don't know what a word means, go ahead. Some of these books, these like Turn the Page, this one's a new one. I haven't read it yet. The Circe Guide to Reading. They are so vastly different from each other, and How to Read a Book by Mortimer J. Adler. These are just two, plus all the plethora of happy to let you come look at them, of books out there that talk about how to mark in your book, and you're going to find none of them are the same. Not one of them. But those are the three tips that I could give you. If you're going to write in your book and you're going to underline something, please say why. Don't leave yourself that gift, that little treasure. If you find a principle, mark it and put it down that's in there. If you're identified something that means something to you, if you have a child that is working on something and you need to write that, it's okay to write, Cassie needs this in the margin. I'm picking on my poor daughter. Andrew needs this, Jeremy, Seth. That way I covered everybody. And needs this. Or there might be a student that I'm teaching in my co-op class, and it reminds me of them, and I make that connection. It might be a connection to another book I read and a page number on that, which also might connect to two or three other things. So enjoy that. So I passed out, hopefully there was enough, because I'm a little humbled about the amount of people that are here, an article for you to read, and we don't have as much time for you to try it. Go ahead and read. I really like hum and hawed over an article, and this is not anything profound, but it is a reason of why that you can read it, to go ahead and try your hand. It is paper. It's not even a book. It came from the former magazine of the Circe Institute, which is a homeschool curriculum. They have a small selection that I enjoy for my particular family, and they publish a magazine and whatnot. So please take time to try it in the article or in anything you read, in the Enzyme. I like having my own copy that I don't share with my kids, so I can go through and annotate it, because I take it so much deeper, and just try it out. And you don't have to do it on all of your books. You don't have to do it on all everything you read. And then one last thing I want to share, if we have time, is that training your kids on how to do it. So one, read out loud to your kids. And when you come across something that strikes you, go ahead and stop right then and there and say, I need to underline that in my book. Doesn't matter how old they are. And tell them why. Oh, I passed around the book that I was gonna show you. But go ahead and start with them young as you're reading Little House in the Big Woods. Mark how Ma had a nice, calm demeanor, and I love how this mom responded to do that. I want to be more like her. And go ahead and underline that particular passage and said, Ma is the best mom ever in the margin. And grow them up seeing that you do that. Now, I will warn you that if they see you do that, but go ahead and just model that. But I will say that when you have books that are well written in, and that your toddler does do that. I opened up a book as I was bringing it here to see some toddler writing it. I don't even have any toddlers. And it turned out it was my best friend's daughter had written in there, and she spells mom really well. But it's a treasure to me, and she's all over here, I'm sorry. That it was a treasure, and they're like, oh yeah, Jennabel was reading in that book. And she noticed my writing and felt empowered to write in it too. So I'm a little caveat. I tell that to my Cub Scout parents after I teach them how to pocket knife with the soap. Sorry, there goes all your soap. But and model that. And when you do it as older, as a family, go ahead and I purchased my kids, like we're reading The Lonesome Gods right now by Louis L'Amour. Who knew that he was so amazing and so chock full of principles and chock full of words of wisdom. So I bought them, you know, all their own paperback copy of it, and we discuss about what did you feel, go read two chapters and come back and discuss what did you feel compelled to underline and why. And then, you know, over time, I have my kids bring me their books as teenagers and say, oh, show me your book. Now tell me what did you write in this book and tell me why. Tell me why you didn't write in this book. Were there nothing worthy of underlining? I don't know. Sometimes they are lazy. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.